This is Brian Peckford.
This is Julie Panessi.
This is Zuby.
Hi, it's James Chop.
This is Cabby Richards.
Hey, everybody, this is Paul Brandt, and you're listening to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. Happy Friday, July 1st. You heard that right. Kids are out of school. Happy Canada Day. Enjoy the long weekend. Be safe. Enjoy it with some friends and family. Get to the lake or wherever you're at. Just have some fun. And if you've tuned into me, well, thanks for hopping along on a Canada Day. Before we get to today's episode, let's get to today's episode sponsors, Upstream Data. Go back to Stephen Barber, episode 163, and you can certainly get to listen to a lot of his thoughts, owner, obviously, of Upstream Data on Bitcoin and a whole bunch of different things. And yes, to the lovely listeners who've been asking, I'm trying and actively seeking out to have Stephen Barber back on the podcast. I was just in Upstream Data. I was, I joke around about doing a Mike Rowe impersonation. Well, they had me in there, and I had to chuckle. I was in their black box. They make these black boxes. You can go on social media and see it. I thought I was going to show up, you know, and they put you to work kind of thing. And I chuckle now because, like, I went in there, and certainly they did put me to work, but, like, building what they do is like super, super cool. Way more attention to detail than even I would have thought, you know? And then just like getting a tour of the entire facility, the black boxes were super cool. Learning about how they work, where they put them, the fact that I should have known this, but like Bitcoin, obviously we all know the price of it fluctuates. Well, that can fluctuate the price of what they sell as well, right? When it's in line with Bitcoin. So like, you think it's the worst time to buy? And I mean, that's up for you to decide. But one thing is for sure, certain, the lower Bitcoin goes, the cheaper, you know, what they sell goes to as well. So you got to pay attention to that, which is, you know, I honestly didn't think of that until we were there and got talking and got to meet their team. And it was super cool. I go back to the black box. I was working with Bernie. Shout out to Bernie because he was just chuckling at me. But he, a Filipino man. And he's got a carpenter from back then, and you know he's got this group of guys working under him, and they're building these boxes, and he's got love tunes going on. Like it was, you know, almost calming, as I joke around about the love tunes. It was such a like chill environment, and I would have never expected that, you know. Anyways. Their solution is to pair modular Bitcoin mining data centers to natural gas engines, and together with it, waste energy, it's converted into useful work and monetized. They also offer, you can get an engine put in if you don't have wasted gas. You can actually have the units. Anyways, go to upstreamdata.ca. You can see all of this as I butcher my story. It was a super cool a day last week when I got to go in and actually kind of tour around the facility. Thanks to all the Upstream Data guys for showing me the ropes and just, you know, being so cool and, you know, letting me in behind the scenes. Now, RecTech Power Products, they've committed to excellence in the power sports industry. They offer a full lineup including Can-Am, Ski-Doo, Sea-Doo, Spyder, Mercury, Evinrude, Mahindra, Roxer. It is summertime. It is full go, way we go here, whether you're on the water, whether you're out, on the trails, and their parts department can hook you up with any upgrades or odds and ends in the maintenance field. You know, they're open Monday through Saturday, and for further details, you can visit them at rectechpowerproducts.com or give them a call, 780-870-5464. I was driving into work today, and I always drive by another sponsor, Profit River. I saw HSI was out there. They do the system for Profit River. Anyways, they're the local oil field burners and combustion experts that can make sure you have a compliant system working for you. And the team also offers security, surveillance, and automation products for residential, commercial, livestock, and agricultural applications. I'm seeing HSI everywhere right now. I don't know if I'm just picking up on it or what have you, but it seems like everywhere I go, and I reference again, going by Profit River, they do the security system there, and their vehicles, I just see them everywhere, and they're using technology to give you the peace of mind so you can focus on the things that truly matter. You know, they got some pretty slick stuff, you know, sit at the lake and be able to check on your home or your business via your phone, you know. I mean, some of the technology they're using for this surveillance is just... relatively really, really cool if you want to have that peace of mind. Stop in today, 3902 52nd Street, or give Brody or Kim a call today, 306-825-6310. Gartner Management, he's a guy that's got HSI here as well. He specializes, Lloyd Minster Company, specializing in rental properties. And whether you're looking for a small office or, you know, you got multiple employees, Wade can get you hooked up. Give him a call, 780-808-5025. Now let's get on that tail of the tape brought to you by Hancock Petroleum. For the past 80 years, they've been an industry leader in bulk fuels, lubricants, methanol, and chemicals, delivering to your farm, commercial, or oil field locations. For more information, visit them at hancockpetroleum.ca. He's a Canadian politician with a member of the Legislative Assembly of Alberta for Central Peace Notley. He was elected as a United Conservative Party and now sits as an independent. I'm talking about Todd Loewen. So buckle up. Here we go. Welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast. Today I'm joined by Todd Loewen. So first off, sir, thanks for hopping on.
Hey, no problem. Happy to be here. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
You know, Todd, I say this to every political person who comes on here, that once upon a time, as you can see on the wall, I was everything hockey and everything else. And so forgive me that I don't go and know your playbook and your every detail and stat you've ever had. So I think for myself and the audience, I'd love to just hear a little bit about your story and what led you into politics back when you're running in 2008 and obviously finally elected in 2015. I guess I'm just, you know, for the starting point, let's just hear a little bit about Todd and we'll jump off from there.
Okay. Sounds good, Sean. Yeah. So I first ran in 2008, and what had happened is in 2007, I kind of lost confidence in the current government. I had a small business and there were some changes they made to their, you know, regulations and things. And I thought, yeah, you know what, these regulation changes are affecting my little business in a negative way. And I tried to make some constructive ideas forward to how to fix it, make it more appropriate and better for business. But I just got brushed aside. And so at that time I thought, okay, I have to do something might have to do something different in the next election, because if it's affecting my little business this much, then I could only imagine it affecting other businesses even more. So when the 2008 election came along, I decided, okay, I can't vote for the governing party and I can't vote for the Liberals or NDP. So what am I going to do? And so at that time, I found the Wild Rose. And I guess it's kind of a bit of an interesting story there. I called the Wild Rose Party at that time and said, okay, you know, I'd already reviewed their policies. It looked good, looked like a good conservative platform. So I asked, who's running in my area? I want to donate and campaign for that person. And the conversation was about that quick. And the next comment that came back was, we don't have anybody in your area. Would you like to run? And so that was a bit of a quick turnaround for me on that. And I, at the time, I said, if I can't find somebody in a week, I'll run myself. And I honestly believed I could find somebody else to run. I sincerely believe that. But after a week, I hadn't found anybody to run. They hadn't found anybody to run. So I guess I had to put my money where my mouth was step up to the plate. So I ran in 2008, lost, stayed with the Wild Rose Party, kind of helped build constituency associations across the province, and then ran in 2012. And which was an election that we were kind of expecting to do quite a bit better, maybe even win. But I didn't even win my seat. And interesting enough, at one point, I think I was 35% ahead in the polls, but still lost in 2012. And then, of course, ran again in 2015 with the Wild Rose, won, but then that's when the NDP were elected. That obviously was a bit of a tough time there. And then ran again in 2019 and won then.
Did you always, you know, you mentioned you kind of almost stumble into politics. You look at it, you go, I don't like what's going on. So then you put your hat in. So this wasn't something that, you know, 10 years prior, you were like, you know, if I ever get to the point where I'm at in a stage of life, I would run for politics.
No, I've never considered it before in my life. Never. I voted, I was politically active. I watched, watched the news, kept track of things. I wouldn't have considered myself, I was active in politics, donated, bought memberships, that sort of thing, but I had never considered actually running myself before that point.
Well, then tell me at this stage of my life, I'm sitting here watching going, this is a bizarre time, whether you're talking the world stage or even Alberta, right? To have a premier step down and you know, on top of COVID, on top of just on top of, it just never ceases to continue on, so to speak. When you were first getting involved in politics, does it even relate to now?
I always say that I got involved in politics because I was frustrated with the political system. And every step I've made further up the chain in politics, I've become more frustrated instead of less. So I don't know if that kind of answers the question there, but it's we are in interesting times. And it just seems like every year in politics is something new comes up that we've never seen before.
Well, take me back then to a year ago when you sign on to the letter that, you know, everybody in Alberta certainly knew all about. It was big news back then. You were part of the party then, and then, you know, you get pulled from it and become an independent. And it's almost, man, a year ago feels like 10 years ago kind of thing. But what drove you to put your name on there? And maybe just, I don't know, I'd like to just hear a little bit about the turmoil that was created after that, because you're one of two, I believe, to get really ostracized from the party.
Yeah. So leading up to that, I guess maybe I'll take you back to 2019 election. We won that election. At that time, the premier wasn't very popular. And I thought it was just in my constituency, but it was other constituencies too. You know, couldn't use his picture, couldn't use his name in our advertising in 2019 election, which of course we did win. But it seemed like after that election, there was maybe a bit of a honeymoon phase where people all of a sudden were a lot more positive about the premier and what was going on. But it didn't seem like it lasted that long, maybe about 5 months. By the fall of 2019, I was already getting a lot of complaints within my constituency. And at that time, you know, that was long before COVID. The biggest complaint was standing up to Ottawa and representing Alberta on the national stage and standing up to Justin Trudeau. And so people were already being frustrated by the fall of 2019. And that continued on all the way into, of course, COVID, March 2020. And so that's what I've seen happening. And I guess all the way through that period, that 2020, with the flip-flops in COVID and the actual, saying one thing and doing another, which just increased the frustration for my constituents. So I was actually, you know, going back into my constituency and taking, I don't want to call it abuse, but there's lots of people that were expressing their concerns, grave concerns in the direction of the government and of the premier. And so at that time, you know, I guess I had a choice to make. But, you know, as an elected representative, it's my duty to represent the people that I represent in my constituency to the government and not the other way around. And so things had progressed to the point where I just felt that I had to do something. When I look back to a year ago and look back to the letter that I wrote and asked the premier to resign, I stepped down as caucus chair at that time. Leading up to that, in the last month or so, we'd seen more flip-flops from the government. We'd seen caucus meetings canceled last minute, and a real reluctance to listen to MLAs. And at that point, I felt that I had to step out and do something different. I'm from a small town here in northwestern Alberta. The people that I meet on the street, that have lived in this town for 50 years, they're my friends or my neighbors. They're the best, after my career's done in politics, that I'll still be living in the same community. And living in the same community, I'll be looking these people in the eye every day as I go through town and shop and go about my daily life. So I just felt that it was my duty and my obligation to bring their concerns forward and try to make a difference.
Let's pick up where we left off. To the listener, we had a little change in venue just to make sure the audio hopefully comes through a little smoother. But Todd, you were taking us back to a time, I believe, of your earlier days in politics, back to 2019. I think I heard in there somewhere. You said when you campaigned for the UCP, you couldn't use Jason Kenney anywhere in that. Did I hear that correct?
Yes, that's for sure. Within my constituency, he was very unpopular. And I thought it was maybe just my constituency or maybe just rural Alberta. But it's interesting enough, as the as we sat in government the last couple of years, just talking to other MLAs and cabinet ministers from Calgary, it was actually the same in their constituencies too. So it just showed that there was maybe not a strong light for Premier Kenney right from the start. And I kind of led into the fact that, you know, it seemed like there might have been a little bit of a honeymoon stage for the first few months after the 2019 election, where people started saying, you know what, I didn't like him at the beginning, but, I think he's coming along and things are looking good. But that didn't last long. By the fall of 2019, I already had constituents complaining, quite a bit about the Premier and his actions, and particularly how he represented the Alberta with Ottawa and with Justin Trudeau.
So why, you fast forward now, Jason Kenney stepping down, leadership race, you go, Todd goes, I think I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. Was that an easy choice? Was that a difficult choice? Was that the only choice in your mind?
Well, when I wrote the letter in May 13th, 2021, I had no intentions at that point of seeking leadership or running for premier, and I never had at that point. At that point, I was MLA, and I was enjoying that job and enjoying representing my constituents. But so I had never thought of that. But as the after that time period, and probably maybe up to maybe 6 months ago, again, I still hadn't considered it. But it just seems like in the last 6 months that when we've seen what's happened, we're looking forward to Jason Kenney stepping down, and then kind of looking at who else was going to be running and that sort of thing. I just I felt that I would have something to offer to the race. I think there's an opportunity to bring the conservative movement together in Alberta again, and I believe my views and what I've done is resonates with a substantial number of Albertans. And in order to bring them back to the conservative fold, and in order to get things back together so that we can go to the into the election in 2023 and have a chance of beating the NDP, we need to bring everybody back. And that's my hope, is that we can work on rebuilding and getting things back on track.
It's a short little runway here. You get this election, and then, by next May, it's pretty much, I joked about Jay Woodcroft being thrown in for the Oilers, right? Like, you had a short one runway to make the playoffs, then you make the playoffs, and now you got to really do some work. Well, you look at what you're up against, whoever it is, and it's going to be a short little runway to get voted in, and then another runway to get voted back in. Do you think you can bring everybody back together? Because that's been something that's been talked about a lot on the news lately, has been about how divided the UCP is. Is that a correct statement? And do you think you could be the guy to bring it back together?
Yeah, I think it is correct. There's been a lot of division, and I think we've seen an immediate change, I think, as soon as the Premier agreed to step down. And we need to continue that and continue to build the trust of Albertans. I think that's one of the main things in this upcoming election, will be trust. But I do believe that I can do that. And it's something that has to be done. we've had the opportunity to see in the past what happens when we're not all together. And actually, more so, we've seen in the past what happens when we have lost Albertans' trust. And so I think I represent a wide swath of Albertans that have been frustrated for the last couple of years. And I think we can work on this and get this back.
What do you, I'm curious, with your background as a Wild Rose guy and then coming across the UCP, there's a lot of that group of people that certainly didn't feel like their voice was heard at all once the two joined. Or, obviously the Wild Rose is still there, but a lot of people kind of went back under the unity thought process, right? Let's come together. What do you have to say towards those folks that are worried that no matter who gets put in, they may not be heard?
Yeah, no, I think those are valid concerns, and I understand what they're thinking when they're concerned about that. When we look at the, kind of the division in caucus, the division within the party, and a lot of people like to put it Wild Rose versus BC, but I actually think it's more, there's probably a little bit of a rural urban divide. And that has to do with the constituents that the different MLAs represent. So I think that can be brought back together. We need to be able to work together with everyone. We need to be able to listen to everybody's concerns and make decisions that are good for all Albertans. And I think we can do that. And we've done it in the past. We've had a big tent party in the past, and I think we can do that again. And will it be easy? No, of course not. But if nothing that's worth it is easy, we'll be working hard, and I believe that it can happen.
Let's say October 6th comes, Todd Loewen, new premier of Alberta. What would be the first thing you would want to do as you stepped into that role?
Well, I think the first thing that we have to do is be more collaborative. And, when what we've seen in the past is a bit of a leader-centric party and a leader-centric government. And we need to change that and include more people in the decision-making process. MLAs have been elected by their constituents to represent them in government. And so when they're not listened to and they're not included in the decision-making process, that I believe is where things start falling apart. We need that sort of collaboration going forward. I think that's one of the main things is to include more people in the decision-making process, listen to Albertans more, and start the process of rebuilding the trust with Albertans.
So the big thing, if I heard that correctly, is really trust, trying to reestablish that the government works for the people. Would that be a clear way of putting it?
Yeah, exactly. Because we've seen that lack in the past, and we need to get that back on track for sure.
Well, I got I had Daniel Smith on a few weeks ago, and I plan to, you're one of the names that come up, and then there's obviously other names that have been put in for leadership. And so what happens is people hear you're coming on, and then, a cascade of question comes through. And so, I started off by just trying to give you a good feel of people, a good feel of who Todd Loewen is and what he stands for. And then I almost kind of want to hand the reins over because to me, I'm just one person, and I certainly don't have the insight of all different areas of Alberta. And I just want to, sit back and kind of have some of their questions come through and see what you have to say for yourself. No different if I was listening to you on somebody else's show. So there's been a ton of questions come through, as you can imagine. And a lot of them have come over the last 2 years, right? They've been waiting for somebody to address some of these. So I'm curious if you're put into the position. Here's some questions, and we'll see how far we get and that type of thing, Todd. But one of the ideas is where does Todd stand on the idea of the QR code and the social credit system?
Yeah, I mean, we need to cancel that right away. There's no use for that. I know we have concerns about how we are able to deal with a federal government that may require that for travel. But we should never have to be able to use that to go in restaurants in Alberta and be able to do business in Alberta. That was a failed attempt that I'm not even sure what the attempt was there, to be honest, because it didn't accomplish anything. It was divisive enough with Albertans. It restricted Albertans' rights, and that we need to cancel that program with the QR codes. We have some issues dealing with the federal government and travel and that sort of thing. We don't want Albertans to be stuck in stuck and not be able to travel and move around. But again, we have to set an example right here by stopping that the demands for having that here in Alberta.
The QR system in general really divided a country, really divided the world. Here in Alberta, how do you fix that? How do you bring people back together when they've been so pitted against each other for so long, and a bunch of the different things that have went on? How do you fix that? I mean, that's a big question, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, one of the first things is we got to quit calling people names and accusing people of being responsible for COVID and everything else. We've seen that happen in the past. That's one of the first things we can do. But again, we've seen where people have had their jobs threatened. People have actually lost their jobs. And we look what happened to the healthcare workers last fall when they were, you know, threatened they'd lose their jobs by the end of October, then the end of November, then the middle of December. And that was cruel and inhumane treatment to those workers, those people that we called heroes through the whole pandemic. And then we treated them in such an inhumane way. I can't imagine living a life where you don't know if your career, your chosen occupation, how you feed your family could be lost at any given time. And so again, that's some of the things that we can do to regain that trust and stop that division. We can't be accusing people. People have a right to choose medical treatment as they so choose, and we have to respect that.
Would you be in favor then of maybe an investigation into some of the things that have went on in the last couple of years? Because I know you bring up the healthcare workers. I got police who listen to this show. I got a lot of different people who are putting some very uncomfortable. I don't know if that's the strong enough term, but you kind of get the idea. There's a lot of people put backs against the wall, still might have their back against the wall. Are you in favor of doing a deep dive and trying to get to the bottom, the root cause, if possible, of what on earth transpired, not only, well, in Alberta?
Yeah, absolutely. This needs to be done. We need to have an absolute thorough independent investigation on the COVID and COVID response in Alberta. You know, we can have the same thing federally. I think they're working on some of that now. I think there's some investigations going on right now, but we need that here in Alberta for sure. That's what we have control of here. And we need to find out what this response has done. We've seen a lot of issues that have developed, drug overdoses and everything like that have escalated through this whole pandemic and through the restrictions. And we need to find out what the cost was to society, to people's lives, to, just a myriad of things that have been negatively affected by the response to COVID. I think the response to COVID, the effects of the response to COVID will be seen far after the effects of COVID itself.
What was the inside of these conversations like in the middle of COVID, over the last 2 years? I just, as a guy sitting on the outside, no matter what side of the fence you sat on at the time of the conversations going on, and no matter what position you held, they were uncomfortable. But you guys were at the, you're the elected officials. You got constituents screaming at you, Todd, going, get us out of this. And then you walk into a room, and I'm sure the diverse conversation that went on while being in that room, well, there will be books written about it, I suppose.
Yeah. So it was interesting in caucus. I was caucus chair through that time period up until I was removed from caucus. I was caucus chair, so I chaired those meetings. And it was interesting to see that more often than not, the majority of caucus would want to go one direction and the premier would go the other direction. And so that was frustrating to see over and over again. But I think maybe what's...
Why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. I really don't know. It was frustrating to see. And sometimes it was almost a lot of times we're advocating for a regional approach because rural Alberta had a different opinion of how to deal with this rather than urban Alberta. But sometimes even the urban MLAs would be on side for doing something different, and it would just never happen. And I honestly don't understand why it was. I believe that would have dramatically changed the view of this government at this point. We would have been in quite a bit different position than we are right now.
I feel like this goes without saying, but I want to make sure a lot of people want to get lots of things on the record. So I might as well have you say it on the record. But I assume if your leadership group of a province is telling you something, you're not going to be the guy. Well, I don't know. I guess what are your thoughts, Todd? Because, I mean, sometimes you got to stand up against the waves when you believe in something. But other times, you got to look around and go, well, it's time to listen to what my advisors and the people and what their constituents are saying, what a province is saying.
Exactly. You know, that's an MLA's job, is bring the constituents' concerns to government and not the other way around, not the government's concerns to the constituents. So I think that was overlooked. But when we look back, I've heard stories of Ralph Klein when he was premier and how he operated his caucus meetings and My understanding was that he wanted to have two-thirds caucus in favor of anything before it proceeded. And there's a story of one time where caucus was pretty divided on a certain issue. And so he just stood up and said, you know what, I'm going to the casino for a couple hours. When I come back, you guys have it figured out. And so that's the kind of trust that he had in his caucus as far as making decisions, because when he walked out of the room, he had no more influence in what the decision was going to be. And I think that would be that's the way I think it should be handled. I think we need to be able to listen to MLA, because they are there to represent their constituents and bring their concerns forward. If we're not listening to them, we're not listening to Albertans, which again is not a healthy way to run a government.
Yeah, I can certainly attest to a lot of people who listen to this, and just they weren't heard, right? I think no matter what they did, no matter how many petitions they signed, no matter XYZ, it just seemed like nothing got through to them.
Yeah. And that was, we've seen the frustration. You know, a lot of times it was the flip-flops, it was moving the goalposts, you know, restaurant owners, you know, build a deck so they could have outdoor dining, and then all of a sudden outdoor dining shut down all the time to get their decks built and everything. And so that was just some deep frustrations. And these frustrations, they're not just frustrations, they change people's lives. I mean, people have lost their homes, lost their businesses, had families divided over these issues, and so the effects are wide ranging. It's not as simple as simple frustration.
How about, and I know we've all certainly heard an awful lot about this, but it is probably the number one question that gets thrown my way for anyone coming on here who's running in this, is the World Economic Forum. Some people don't want to address it. Some people, you know, left, right, center. At this point, it's pretty mainstream idea that Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum have influenced not only the Canadian government, but deeper into just government in general. What's your thoughts on the World Economic Forum, and what can you do to ensure that it doesn't, you know, to, once again, for the average person, they have trust that it isn't destroying Alberta and what they stand for?
Yeah, so I just to state it out front, I have no ties and I've never had any association with the World Economic Forum. So I just want to put that out there first. But I just want to say that the World Economic Forum, they have their own agenda. Some of it's publicized, and that's bad enough if you look at that. But we don't know what else is going on with them in the background. But I have no interest in having any association with them. We have our Alberta here that we can make our own decisions. We know what's going on within you know, what Albertans want to see, and we don't need an organization from outside the world come into our province and help and try to make influence what we do here in Alberta. We can make those decisions ourselves. We can contact people around the world to get advice if we need so, but we don't need an organization like that influencing what we do. And again, their agenda doesn't line up with our agenda.
It's strange time. You know, when you said you first walked into politics, the deeper you got, the more frustrated you become. Do you think at the top of being the premier, you think that, you'll be less frustrated, or do you think the frustration will continue?
Well, I hope that things will improve for sure. I believe that I can, you know, that I have an opportunity to make a difference. If I didn't, I wouldn't put my name forward. I think a lot of it has to do with, again, I probably keep coming back to this, but trust. We need to be able to have trust in our elected officials. We need to build that up, and we need to show Albertans that we are, you know, strong, and that we can listen to them, listen to everybody, be collaborative, and not fight all the time. It seems like in government we spend most of our time fighting those around us, and I think we have a chance to be a little more collaborative than that.
How about net zero? Net zero has been a hot topic of late, and it's been a hot topic for a while. A lot of people stare at in Alberta, how can we ever achieve net zero? Why would we ever want to achieve net zero with our industry and everything else? What's your thoughts on net zero and moving towards that, away from that?
Well, I think with net zero, I guess there's kind of two ways to look at it, but, you know, kind of on a personal level with your own home and everything. And obviously that should be your choice on how you want to take care of your home. But when it comes to net zero and as a province, I think there's many ways that we can work towards net zero. But I think there's a lot of times we see the attempt to get to net zero is all about taxing and all about making things more difficult and everything. So we need to, I think we need to be able to analyze those things. There's lots of different things that can help us, you know, reduce our emissions if that's the desire. There's lots of different things that we can do to get things back on track. And it, you know, we don't want to be, you know, ignore these concerns, but we do have to do some things a little bit different, I think. So, but again, I think there's a myriad of things that could be done to help reduce emissions and try to, you know, be more accommodating on some of those things. But again, we need to make sure that we're not hurting Albertans. We're not, you know, using these things to punish Albertans, like with the carbon tax and things like that.
So would you get rid of the carbon tax if you could?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially in rural Alberta, but really all across Alberta, all it does is punishes us for you know, driving to work, heating our homes. You know, we got farmers that have to dry their grain, and they're paying a price for that too. So,
you know, I brought it up that, you know, as I work my way through the people putting their name forward as candidates for leadership. Daniel Smith had brought up, you know, like whether it's BC, whether it's Quebec, if a federal mandate comes down, it just doesn't work for Alberta. Why can't we be like those other two provinces and literally just not follow what they're saying? Is that something you agree with, disagree with, have your own thoughts on?
Well, we need to be protecting Albertans' interests first. When we look at all these other issues and other, you know, what's happening across the country, I think we need to stay focused on Alberta's interests and we kind of resist the temptation to go down rabbit holes that don't benefit Albertans. Yes, we have a certain amount of you know, association we have to do within Canada as a nation, but again, we need to focus on what's right for Albertans.
How about independence, Todd? A lot of people, whether it's autonomy, I mean, independence kind of... just in general, but autonomy has been talked about a lot, you know, a police force, pension, et cetera. You know, is that possible? Do you want it?
Yeah, we need to start working towards autonomy here in Alberta. When we look at what we campaigned on in 2019, we've seen a lot of, we made a lot of promises. We talked about all the things we're going to do. And what's happened is we've continued to just talk about these things. We need to be able to start doing these things. When we look at our association with Ottawa, we've seen Ottawa come in with, you know, for instance, Bill 48 and Bill 69. The response from the Alberta government was a strongly worded letter, no real response. And when we look at the, you know, Tech Mine being canceled due to federal regulations and interference, again, not a strongly worded letter. We look at the stabilization funds that we were supposed to get. We never got them. Again, strongly worded letter. We need to start standing up, and we can use Quebec as an example of a province that's done a lot of things that didn't create constitutional crisis, but got the point across to Ottawa, and they reap the benefits of that. And we need to start reaping those same benefits. We need to move forward on some of these things. A lot of people say, well, these things like a pension plan, that's leverage. We use that for leverage in dealing with Ottawa. Well, if you have no intention of ever using it, it isn't leverage. It's just a talking point and virtue signal. We have to start doing some of these things. Albertans, I think, are expecting it. They're tired of what's been happening between us and Ottawa, and we need to start pushing back.
When you talk about standing up to Ottawa and writing a letter, obviously isn't enough. What would you do that is standing up? Because standing up is just a general, like, we should all stand up to Ottawa. But sitting here, I go, okay, so what should we do then? What like, when things don't go our way, or we believe we've been wronged, what does standing up mean to Todd Long?
Well, I think, again, let's say with Bill 48 and Bill 69, had our response been, okay, if you're not going to back off on that, we will be doing our own pension plan. And that way there would be at least a political price to pay for what Ottawa is doing. And like I say, some of these things we need to do anyways, whether it's influencing them or not, because it's beneficial to Albertans. But the more independence we have from Ottawa, the more autonomy we have from Ottawa, the stronger we are. Again, if we could look at collecting our own taxes, for instance, that would be a huge benefit to Albertans and put us a little bit more in the driving seat when it comes to how our taxes are spread across the country.
I feel like, and don't, by all means, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I feel like there might be two platforms that, and not just, you'll have to forgive me. You're my second interview on this subject. So I look at it and I go, what I hear from you and what I hear from Danielle, and I'll be curious to see what I hear from others, is if you get elected in October, we have to plan to win in May. And if we win in May, then we get to enact things. The other is, if I get elected in October, I'm going to enact things immediately so that I get elected again in May. I hope I said that right. Do you think you can get elected? Well, do you want to enact anything on day one, or you want to just build trust and try and sew this back together for May?
I think first thing is building that trust, and because that's what's going to set us up for the election 2023. I believe the election 2023 will be fought on trust. I believe Albertans are sitting there, they're waiting for somebody that they can trust that's going to do what they say they're going to do, and so I believe that's going to be the number one thing right off the bat. But how you gain that trust is by doing the things that you said you're going to do, and that's what's going to happen. Again, I think there's a huge amount of frustration with government when it comes to dealing with Ottawa. But we've seen a lot of frustration, a lot of stress and anxiety, and actually hurt due to inflationary measures, or inflation within Alberta and across the country, obviously too. But those inflationary pressures are causing grief within families and homes and businesses. We need to start working on getting the economy back on track. I don't know who thought that we could shut down the economy for 2 years and there would be no. No negative consequences, but we're suffering from that right now. We have our province. We complain a lot about the federal debt that Canada is in, over $1 trillion. But we got $112 billion of debt here in Alberta. We're paying $2.7 billion a year in interest. We're spending 10% more than the NDP said, and we lit our hair on fire about their extravagant expenses and budgets. So we need to start reining things in a bit and getting things in line, start paying off that debt and start making things better, because that money that we're paying in interest isn't going to help Albertans.
This one's probably more for me than anything. One of the things as a young guy, and I mentioned this off the hop with you, I didn't pay... particular. Well, I mean, I was out of country and everything else for a while, but when I got back and had kids, and I assume, when you have kids, you start thinking about different things and, what party you're heading to on the weekend. But, one of the things I have a hard time understanding, Todd, and maybe you can explain this to me. Maybe you wonder the same thing, is a lot of politicians have a hard time admitting when they're wrong. Right. When they've just gotten something blatantly wrong. Like, it's just like, we need to go back to the drawing board. We need to look at these in different ways. Why is that so difficult for politicians? One. And two, if you were to become the leader, although it might signal the end of your career, because the way social media runs right now is, I fully understand why you can't say, oh, I was wrong, because of what it might do on social media and everything else. And yet, out of a leader, that's exactly what I would love to see, right? I'd love to see somebody who just admits that, sometimes I'm human and I make mistakes. It's okay to admit that. I think it's a very good quality, as long as we learn from that and move forward. So the question, I guess, is why doesn't it happen more or ever? And two, if you got in the position, is that something you think you could pull off?
Yeah, and I think why it doesn't happen is that I think some people believe that admitting you made a mistake shows weakness. And I actually think it's actually the opposite. Admitting you made a mistake actually shows strength, that you're willing to take responsibility and be accountable for a poor decision or a poor action. And as far as myself, I'm far from perfect. I know if I become premier, I will make mistakes. I think that's inevitable. But again, we can look back to Ralph Klein's years again, where when he made several mistakes along in his political career, and he apologized and moved on. And I think Albertans respected that, and I think they'll continue to respect that. But I agree that it does seem to be hard to find a politician who will admit that they made a mistake. And again, I think it's about a feeling that it shows weakness, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know why Kenny comes to mind so many times where he deflected and he never just say, we got this one wrong. All right. Like, or we thought this and we moved here. And I mean, only when it supplied ammo for where he was heading. And to me, it felt, I don't know. But we sit on the border of Alberta and Saskatchewan. Obviously I live in Alberta, but right here in Lloydminster, right on the border of Saskatchewan, the two borders, sorry, I'm muddling this up, but the whole reason I'm saying this is I got to watch Kenny and Mo both kind of like dance this weird dance of just like, listen, guys, let's go back to the drawing board and move forward so we can make some things right, because there are people hurting. And instead, the divide grew and grew and grew to where we're at. And I just, for me, particularly, I listen and I go, I want somebody who can sit up there and be strong enough to go, listen, I thought this is what it was. We sat, we talked, we listened, we kept, and this is what happened, and we were wrong. And so we're going to go this way. And I hope that's something that all the candidates can embody. It'll be very easy to talk about, but when you're actually there, something very different.
Yeah. And, you know, with the pandemic, it was a perfect opportunity because, you know, especially from the start, nobody knew what to expect. You know, we could look back to March 2020 and, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, we made some decisions in government early on that were very unpopular and very damaging. What was frustrating is we realized very soon, within a month or 6 weeks even, we realized that those mistakes were made. But it took us months before we finally changed things. But you're exactly right. I think Albertans would welcome somebody like that would be able to, you know, be humble enough to admit that they made a mistake. And again, I've made mistakes and I'll continue to make mistakes. And I hope that I could, have that strength to be able to admit I'm wrong and carry on. That's what I would intend to do.
Which modern day leader is somebody that you look up to, that you admire
doing? We could look to DeSantis or Kristi Noem as some pretty good leaders on the U.S. side. It's always hard to pick a leader that you want to emulate or somebody you want to look up to, because they all have weaknesses. And when you pick somebody, the first thing that everybody does will look to their weaknesses. Like you look towards them. Well, how about this, and this? So it's a little hard to, I guess in human nature is that we're always looking for faults rather than strengths. But yeah, there's several people around the world that have been strong and have done the right thing. And I think we can look to several of them and hopefully gather the best of each of them and use them to try to look at as far as, somewhat of a role model or somebody to look up to.
Let's go down the opposite path. The opposite path is Todd doesn't win. Okay. Let's paint that picture for a second. Will you support the new, if it isn't you, would you support the new person out of the candidates you're seeing that are popping up?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I have to be, trust that the process and that the people of Alberta will choose somebody that they feel is the best representative for them. And I'll definitely respect that and work with whoever that is. Again, it's bigger than just one person, this whole process. you know, being a representative of the people. Some people, you know, we always want to call the political leaders, but actually they should be called political representatives. We have to be conscious of representing the people and not just always be thinking of leadership. But again, I would I'd be happy to support whoever the people of Alberta choose, and members of basically members of the party, UCP party, whoever they choose, and work towards making things better all across the province.
You think, you know, when you talk about representing the people, there is a strong rural-urban divide. Like, I think I've mentioned it multiple times on here, 83% of Canadians live in cities, right? So, like, you kind of get a sense there. From your eyes, where you sat, like, is there a way to represent everyone? Or is that the most difficult challenge known to man when you got 4 point however many million people in Alberta, let alone, you know, like, and then you divide them up to either each different area? That's a difficult task, Todd. How do you pull that off?
It is a difficult task. And you know, even the last election, you know, I was elected with 75% of the vote. And a lot of people think, well, that's great. That's a huge win. But I realized that that means 1 out of 4 people will probably not support anything I do, because they didn't support me in election. They're probably not supporting, you know, my political views at all. And but when we look across the province in the last election, it was, you know, that was a well, I guess 63 seats is a pretty good standard of win. But there, I think it was 56 or 57% of the population voted for the UCP. And again, that means that 43% are not going to be happy with almost every decision that's made. And that, I think we have to realize that and have enough humility that when we're making decisions, that we need to understand that that there's a great number of people that won't feel represented by that decision. But again, we need to be able to bring everybody to the table. I think the majority of Albertans, and when we're dealing with different groups within Alberta, I think most of them would be happy or maybe at least satisfied that at least they felt they were listened to. At least that they, you know, they had a chance to have their say. And even if the decision didn't go exactly the way they want, at least if they felt like they were listened to, I think that would be that would make a lot of them at least a little more satisfied than they would be otherwise.
Yeah, that's the challenge all politicians face at this point, right? Is how do you represent such a diverse population when it comes to such large issues that, you know, whether it's on purpose or just a consequence of where we're at in society with social media and everything else, it is divided. Like, we are, you know, there's no peace, you know, there's no, even somebody listening to you, they may go, check. Ooh, I like that. Check. Oh, I don't like that. Can't vote for this guy. He's got one thing I detest. That's out. Right. And I go, I don't know if there's such a thing as a you know, that knight in shining armor who rides in and has all the check marks. I mean, well, I think we'd all love that, but I don't even know what that looks like.
No, I don't think any of us do. And I guess maybe politics is the art of compromise, where we have to, but on both sides, as politicians, we need to, you know, be able to compromise with this, you know, be able to come up with a solution that is maybe best for the overall, but maybe not individually the best for yourself. And I think as the people of Alberta, they have to do the same. They have to, when they go to the ballot box, I'm sure they're thinking, okay, I wish this was a little different, but this is the best we can do, and put that check there. So, maybe that's the best way to describe it.
Well, let's slide into the final five, brought to you by Crude Master. If you're going to stand behind a cause that you think is right, then stand behind it absolutely. What's one thing Todd Loewen stands behind?
I guess when I look at politics in general, I guess there's multiple things. I've always been a fiscal conservative. I've always been focused on making sure that the taxpayer dollars get spent as efficiently and effective as possible. I think there's you know, we look at situations like in our healthcare or education, post-secondary education. There's so many things there that that we need to work on and get fixed. That I, you know, it's hard to pick just one. But again, if we and maybe we, you know, if we talk about freedom and freedom of speech in particular, if we have freedom of speech, then we can, you know, at least be able to argue for anything that we want, or at least protest or do those things. But if we don't have freedom of speech, then we really don't have anything in a democracy, because everything else will be taken away from us and we can't say anything about it. So I don't know, maybe I'm not sure if that's kind of the direction you were headed with that question, but there's a couple things there.
Well, before I let you go, I don't want to take up your afternoon, and it's been an interesting, you know, we pulled it together after having some tough audio at the start, but is there anything else you want, you know, like we kind of jump from subject to subject and everything else. Is there something else in there, Todd, that you're like, I want to make sure people know this about me or about where I stand, you know, cause it's like I say, it's a short runway between here and you know, this election in October.
Yeah. So I guess if I was to say anything kind of in closing, I would say, you know, at almost every event I go to, somebody always asks me, you know, why you, you know, what makes you so special that you think you should be the Premier of Alberta? And so I've had a chance to kind of think about that as I've, you know, muddled around through the answers, because it's one of those things where, you know, as a politician, at some point you're going to have to try to tell everybody how great you are. and for me, that's a hard thing to do, is to I often joke that it's like, yeah, the greatest thing about me is how humble I am. So, I mean, it's hard to do that. But I think there's nothing special about me. I'm just an ordinary guy, and I love Alberta. Born and raised in Alberta. I just want the best for my kids and my grandkids. I've been blessed to have a good life here in Alberta, and I just hope that when my political career is done, that I can walk down the street and look my neighbors and friends and family in the eye and say that I've done my best, and they'll understand that too. So again, I think you know, a great opportunity now to do something good in Alberta and you know, somewhat change direction of where we've been and maybe change things politically so that we can be a beacon around the world as far as a place that's fiscally responsible, taking care of the people within the province, and being responsible and a trustworthy government.
One final one for you after that. Now you got my brain spinning. You go back to the letter, right? And it was one of 16.
Well, there's kind of two letters that we talked about there. There was the letter where 16 MLAs signed that was basically asking the government not to keep changing the goalposts on COVID restrictions. So there's that letter which I signed and which I helped get other MLAs to sign. And then there's a letter that I wrote to asking the Premier to resign, and where I resigned as caucus chair. So there's two letters there.
Okay. So my question then is, in a time where nobody wanted to poke their head up because they knew exactly what was going to happen, why did Todd Loewen poke his head up?
Just exactly how I described, you know, when I was going home in my constituency. The vast majority of the people I was talking to, actually overwhelmingly number of people that I was talking to, said, you're not representing us. We're mad, we're frustrated, we're hurt, and you're not representing us. And I would say, you know what, we're in caucus, I'm arguing, I'm doing my best. And they're saying, we don't see it, we don't believe you. If you don't stand out, then we can't trust you that you're actually representing us. And so that's why I decided I had to write the letter. I had to show the people that I represent that I was representing them. And of course, I understand that, you know, just like I said earlier, one out of four is not seeing things my way right off the start. But the vast majority of the people I was talking to were concerned about the direction, and I felt that I had to step forward and say those things.
Well, I tell you what, I appreciate you being open about it and honestly being one of the ones to stand up, because I would say, whether you knew it or not, That's walking into the line of fire. That's not a characteristic that a lot of, you know, that had to have been just slightly uncomfortable, even though you knew you were doing right by the people you represented. You knew you were walking into the spotlight. I get the sense that you don't, it's not like you're looking for the spotlight, more of a, you know, maybe a call of duty, so to speak, is like, this is what I'm here for. I gotta stand up for what my constituents believe and why I'm why I'm elected in the first place.
Yeah, it was honestly a gut-wrenching decision. It really was incredibly hard. But again, that's why MLAs are elected, is to make decisions and make tough decisions and do what's right. And in the end, I believe I did the right thing then. We've seen now the premier step down, so I guess it took a while. It took a year to kind of get the point across and make it actually happen. But you know, it was tough going into the constituency, listening to my constituents that were so frustrated and angry and hurt. And so I, you know, my gut wrenching and my discomfort with what I did pales in comparison to what they were going through.
Well, I appreciate you giving me some of your time, Todd, and all the best here as best of luck as you hit this short runway with the rest of them trying to, you know, I think I always bring this up here and I'll bring it up again. July 20th, you need to have 1,000 party members signed. July 29th, you need the 175,000 plus the 25,000 of good conduct deposit. And then, of course, October 6th is when this all goes down. So it's, like I say, as we sit here, this is released on July 1st. So happy Canada Day to everyone. Because you do the math on that. That's not this long runway. It's a short little season, short little spread, to get people to hear your voice, and others to get their voice heard as well. And then a vote. So I'll be, paying attention, and I just wish you the best of luck as you hit the campaign trail.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And just again, apologies for the internet connection earlier. And then I noticed in the background I had some strange shadows going as we talked. So I had to move the screen a little bit there. And so anyways, it's been an interesting discussion on the side, but the discussion we've had has been great. And I appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you and have this discussion. And you're exactly right, Bill. It's a short window of time, and but when you're campaigning, it seems like another 3 months of this is going to be a long haul. But there's a lot happening, and it's an important thing. I mean, this is democracy in action. It's time for Albertans. They'll be choosing a new premier, which is that normally only happens every 4 years, but this one's coming up a little quicker, and so it's an important decision. Encourage as many Albertans as possible to be involved in this political process. Get a membership in UCP and support your candidate and have your say in this process.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Sean.